This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
People who are truly a peaceful, loving, connected community, family oriented, always a smile on their faces. And by the end of that vacation, I was already toying with the idea of writing this novel, and it was really in some way to try to understand that disconnect between the beauty of the country and the beauty of these people and the horror of terrorism. I think that when I wrote the novel, that it was those two poles that kept pulling me back and forth. I needed to capture the lushness of the island, the gentle souls of the Balinese people, and I had to put myself in the middle of that terrorist attack. So I think I was feeling some of that disconnect. I kept trying to make sense out of, you know, how do I move back and forth in those two spaces. One of the things that I did to really try to bring that the bombings onto the page, and I'm so glad you responded the way you did. I read lots and lots of first-person accounts that I could find on the web and doing some research. And then I interviewed quite a few survivors of the attack when I was in Bali, as well as families of some of the victims, and I got all of the very personal stories. So my attempt was to make this the story about the people who are affected by terrorism rather than a political treatise about why terrorism happens. I wanted to take it as close to one person's experience as I could, because I think that's the way that the reader gets access to that experience. And I think we just experienced that with the Boston bombing. I don't know if you felt this way, but I read everything I could. Every time a new article came out, I read it, you know, start to finish. And of course, we watch TV endlessly when those things happen. And I think we're trying to understand something that we can't quite understand. So my attempt to make that, to be able to communicate that experience, is to take it as close to the personal as I possibly could.
I first read this book prior to the Boston Marathon bombing, and when it occurred, it really brought it home in a deeper way for me. I realized, you know, what the people were going through that were affected, whether they were in the scene or family members of victims. It made me realize what they were feeling perhaps right at that moment, yeah, but also what they would be dealing with
right.
in the years to come.
In fact, that is, since most of the book takes place a year later, it is really much more about the aftermath, mm-hmm, and how do we heal, and how does violence like that change us. And I made the decision almost immediately in creating Jamie, the main character. I decided she'd be an adventure guide, and I wanted her to be the kind of person, the kind of young woman who was out there taking on the world with this force that was unstoppable, that she wanted to go to every country. She wanted to climb every mountain. She wanted to, any challenging, new, exciting situation, she wanted to take on. And it's that person who will be most profoundly affected by this act of violence. And that gives me access to how deep the wounds are. That can this person turn around and after this return to her life and do what she used to do? And the answer is no. Yes, she might be able to get herself back onto the next tour to lead a group into, you know, some new country, but she doesn't do it in the same way. So I really was looking at how do we grapple with making sense of that in a very personal way after we've been affected by violence like that.
Yeah, I felt it was a universal story. You know, how do we as humans make peace with right. that knowledge that there is no paradise?
Right.
There is no safety.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
That was a major theme of your book. Yeah. I'm quoting you, actually.
And, well, we, you know, one of the things I talked about at the reading last night that was kind of a surprise for me is that when I'm writing a novel like this, it is not autobiographical. I was not in Bali during the bombings. I was not an adventure guide at any point in my life, though I wish I had been. and I write the story because it intrigues me on some level that I think is outside of myself, but that's not ever true. So after I'm done writing a first draft of a novel, I start to see what's working on a subconscious level. And many years ago, when I was 18 years old, I was the victim of a violent act, and it changed my life in very profound ways. And interestingly, it took place in a foreign country, and I have never returned to that foreign country. I've never been able to. So I think one of the things that I was also looking at in this novel is there something like closure? Why couldn't I return to that country? So, of course, I create a character who is can do what I can't do, and I'm looking at what does that offer her and how does that change her and how can we move on, because we have to move on. I mean, I'm a real proponent of, you know, the bad things that happen in our lives can't knock us down. And yet this is one thing I had never been able to overcome. So I mean, I've never been a victim of terrorism, but I was raped as a girl. And all of those experiences are, you know, you're living your life one day and suddenly out of the blue, something happens and it's that act of violence changes everything. It seems maybe ridiculous that I hadn't known how close I was getting to my own experience in writing this book. But I do know what that is. And I am always pondering the choices that we make to kind of carry on and throw ourselves into life as if nothing bad could ever happen. That's the way I want to live. Mm-hmm. But we all know that, you know, this stuff happens, and it happens in very real ways.
Mm-hmm. There's so many directions I could go right now, but in general, the people involved in the bombing in Bali, they were Westerners, you know, many Australians,
right.
Europeans, Americans.
Right.
And then there were the Balinese people who were working in these clubs, right, that were bombed. And they all, quote, experienced the same horrific event. But it felt to me that the way that they recovered was quite different based on their worldview and their spirituality.
Right. That's right.
Can you talk about some of the differences between Western and Eastern modes of recovery?
Right. It's that was so fascinating to me, and perhaps it's also part of my search to understand what are other options that we might have, mm-hmm, for healing. What I needed to do a lot of research, and when I returned to Bali and spent a month there, I talked to a lot of Balinese people about their theories of reincarnation and how they deal with death. And they so firmly believe in reincarnation that they don't respond in exactly the same way. Now, I think there's a line, I don't remember it exactly, where Neoman, the owner of the guest house where Jamie stays, who lost his wife in the bombing, he is explaining to her how he feels about reincarnation. And then he says, but I still have a hole in my heart. So one of the things that I found is that this theory helps them tremendously. This man truly believes that he will someday have a child and that the wife he lost will be reincarnated as his child. And that is the way their reincarnation works in the Balinese religion. But if you push hard enough, you still find out that that doesn't solve, mm-hmm, that doesn't take away the grief. It helps. It may be a much better feeling of acceptance,
right?
Right. Mm-hmm. They also very much believe in fate, and if this happened, it was meant to happen. Mm-hmm. And so you don't fight. Maybe there's not as much anger. Maybe there's not as much. You don't go through all those stages of why me and I hate the world. But that doesn't take away grief. And I find that in my writing, I write about loss a lot. And that is one of my big issues in life, to understand how we move on when we've lost people we love. And so I was curious how much this helps, and it helps tremendously, but on a very core level, the grief is still shaping how you live because there's still a hole in your heart. Mm.
The Western characters, a year after the bombings, in 2003, we reconnect with Jamie, the adventure guide, young woman from Berkeley, and she also reconnects with the man who helped save her that fateful night,
right.
Gabe, both Westerners, Americans. And it's interesting. It seemed that the Westerners, a year later, they were not okay.
That's right.
They had guilt, survivor's guilt. Right. They had kind of closed down
their hearts.
And I thought that was so interesting. And you seem to convey in the book, it's this beautiful universal message that, you know, it's that we have to help each other.
Right.
The best we can do is help each other through grief. Some of us have already experienced it and have some wisdom and some, you know, we can kind of point the direction. And it was just that human connection might be our salvation.
Right. I'm so glad you see it that way. That it was so clear to me when I spent the time in Bali that the Balinese were doing something so much better than we do it. Their lives are very, very much wrapped around community and family. Every part of their daily life is a reconnection to their religion, with a focus on family and community. In fact, Jamie is shocked to find that the Balinese live in these family compounds. So there are lots of little kind of cottages in one compound where the grandparents live and the aunt and uncle and the children. And when the son gets married, his wife will move into the compound. It's still a very patriarchal society, but it's a very family-oriented society. So what I saw when I spoke to the people who were affected by the bombing is they had their families who took care of them. And Jamie reflects on her family back in the United States, and her parents are divorced, and she doesn't see her folks very much. In fact, Neoman is shocked that she doesn't live with her family. And of course, she's a 30-year-old single woman. She's not going to live with her family. So there's such a difference between those cultures. And what Jamie needs to do to heal is to connect. To connect to other people. It may be family, and that's part of it, but it may also just be to other people, so she's not alone in her struggle. And I do think we as Americans, and probably as Westerners in general, spend too much time alone in our struggles. And this notion of community to heal and community to grow is fabulous. We just live in such a fractured society right now that we've moved so far away from that.
And, you know, there's a myth that we all are raised with of the fierce individualist.
Exactly.
And it's our undoing in so many ways.
Exactly, exactly. Mm-hmm. And in fact, Jamie thinks that perhaps love is a weakness, you know, that committing mm-hmm. to a relationship will make her a less independent person, right? That if she gives up this independence, she'll be giving up too much in the world. And that's part of her journey in this book, is to understand that loving someone may bring her farther, help her develop farther in the world instead of keeping her away from of what the world has to offer her.
It's a completely different metric.
Yeah,
you know.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
I know that you mentioned last night at Annie Bloom's that that although this was identified as a terrorist bombing in 2002, that the reasons for it are still murky.
That's right.
Nobody quite knows why. But is it fair to say that those bombs were aimed at Westerners?
Yes. But the thing that I got so many differing opinions on this when I would ask people in Bali, both the Balinese and the Westerners, why they think it happened. So it was a year after, you know, our own attacks at 9/11 in the United States, and it was an al-Qaeda group from Indonesia that did this. And yes, Western nightclubs were attacked. But Bali has a very odd role in Indonesia. It is part of Indonesia, but Indonesia is 99% Muslim, and Bali is not. Bali is 99%. They practice Balinese Hinduism. And Bali is also the most successful tourist destination in Indonesia. So the rest of Indonesia has trouble with Bali. They are not happy with Bali being the popular destination for the rest of the world, and they're not happy with them not being a Muslim country or Muslim island, part of their country. So a lot of the Balinese are actually blame the rest of Indonesia for attacking them as a personal attack on the country rather than just an attack on Westerners. So that complicates the issue, right? As we saw, Balinese tourism died for the next years and was starting to revive just as there was a next set of attacks. And then again, it died for a while until Eat, Pray, Love put Bali back on the map. And terrorism does that, and it affects all Westerners in addition to, in that case, having killed 200 young people from all countries around the world. But it isn't as clear. You know, you can look at the attacks on the World Trade Center, and it's absolutely clear what that message was, why the terrorists attacked the center of the economic, you know, world. And it is not as clear when you look at the attacks in Bali.
Your book, The Paradise Guest House, by the way, we're speaking with Ellen Sussman, author of the new novel, The Paradise Guest House, deals with the aftermath of the 2002 terrorist bombings in Bali. And this book was very thought-provoking for me as a reader to begin to think about more about why Westerners seek paradise across the world and what we import along with us in these countries. It seems in the book you mentioned some expat characters.
Right.
It came across as if often we're jaded, we're disillusioned with our life here, we're seeking something, and we go and but we carry with us some of our issues and problems.
That's right.
The club scene, I'm assuming, was, you know, drinking, drugs,
absolutely,
sex trafficking, perhaps.
Right.
When Jamie first arrives in Bali, a street kid, who I loved,
yeah,
Bam Bang, he asks her, "Do you want marijuana? Do you want man?" And that was like, whoa,
yeah,
is this what we represent?
Right, that's right.
And can you talk about that a little,
yes,
your thoughts on that?
It's funny. I wrote a first draft of the novel before I returned to Bali. I had only been there on vacation. And as I wrote about the expat community in particular, I was wrong. I was just dead wrong about who they were and what it was about. When I had lived in Paris for 5 years as an expat, and the expat community in Paris is made up predominantly of business people, journalists, lawyers, people who are lucky enough to be sent by their companies, businesses, to work in Paris for a period of time. So it's a very sophisticated, isn't the right word, but it's a working community. Bali, the expat community in Bali is the opposite of that. It is truly made up of people who are either dropping out because of problems that they've had in the countries that they're living in, or they've made enough money that they retire and they want to kind of escape to paradise. So you don't get the same sense at all of this dynamic community. You really get this greater sense of a community that is falling into paradise and maybe disappearing a little bit, but they bring their problems with them. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a line that Gabe says is, why is it that everybody moves here to escape their problems, and then all they do is they talk about their problems? So it's a very odd kind of makeup of that world. And now, of course, there are exceptions to that, and I'm generalizing. Mm-hmm. But I think it does tap into this idea of that somewhere there is paradise and somewhere we'll be happy. Mm-hmm. And you go there and you take yourself with you. You haven't left yourself behind or your problems.
Yeah, it's not an internal quest.
Exactly.
It's external. It's really illuminating about the West, right? And gives us a lot of food for thought.
Exactly.
About this. And it was so sad. I was saddened to learn that after the bombing, the Westerners received preferential treatment.
Oh,
they were
God.
All flown to Australia. And folks might not recognize this, but in Bali, there was no burn center.
Isn't that amazing?
You mentioned that. And the Balinese were stuck there.
Right, right.
Westerners were whisked away
right.
to be saved.
It was, I mean, when I heard those stories, I was horrified. It was, you know, you just think, how could they have treated their own people this way? That's right.
Well, at heart, this book is a love story mm-hmm. between Jamie and a man who helped save her that night. And it was just, I just wanted to say, it was beautiful how it unfolded so slowly and subtly. And
oh, that's wonderful to hear.
Yes.
Yeah.
The writing in general, Ellen, was really, it was subtle. It almost had the pace of paradise, mm. you know, and at parts it was, time kind of stood still, as it does in an accident, you
That's
know,
right.
And it was really, I loved the mood and the feel of the book, but then there were these
you.
Sentences that just snuck up on you where you really, I think, illuminate the human condition and make sense of this chaos
and
these holes in our souls. Yeah. It was a beautiful read. I recommend it, The Paradise Guest House, to all of you listeners by Ellen Sussman.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Ellen, anything coming up that you'd like our readers to know about or how they can get in touch with you or learn more about your work?
Sure. I have a website, which is ellensussman.com. That's ELLENS, as in Sally, USSMAN.com. And through the website, readers can contact me. You just click on the contact page. And I love to hear from readers. In fact, I'm at the best part since the book has been out for about 6 weeks. I now receive fan emails, and I love that. I mean, writing is a communication. So truly, we write to share our story with readers. And so when I hear from readers who tell me, like you have just done, about your experience in reading the book, nothing moves me more than that. It's really what it's all about is I'm sharing my story, and that process is not done until the reader reads it. So it's so much fun now to be getting that feedback from readers. Yeah.
Well, it's a beautiful book. Once again, it's The Paradise Guest House by Ellen Sussman. And you can learn more about her at www.ellensussman.com. That's Sussman. You've been listening to Between the Covers on KBOO. I'm Leanne Kranz. Thank you so much for listening. And Ellen, thank you so much for being our guest.
Thank you. This has been so much fun to talk to you, Leanne. I really appreciate it.
I wish you all the best in your career. It's been just a thrill to watch all of your success.
Thank you.
Over the years. All right. Thanks, everybody.
The Oregon Cartoon Institute and KBOO Community Radio are proud to present Harry Smith, PDX, a history and arts education project. Harry Smith in the Pacific Northwest, a panel discussion at the Hollywood Theater, will be held May 16th at 3 o'clock. There will be a Harry Smith seance featuring 16mm films by Harry Smith, plus writers and film directors whose works highlight Harry Smith's life, on May 16th at 7 p.m., at the Hollywood Theater. Finally, at the Harry Smith Three for All at the Cleaners, May 19th, from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m., there will be a series of short interactive presentations about the life and work of Harry Smith. More information about Harry Smith PDX can be found online at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the page under Community Events. We'll be right back.
This KABU program has been made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from Merrill Hurst University's new Bachelor of Arts in Media and Film Studies, where you can explore how media in all forms affect not only how we view the world, but how we shape it. You'll learn the power of media and how you can use that power to become a participant in change. Now accepting applications. Details at merrillhurst.edu/KBOO.
Some music there from Jacob's Ladder at the only state-sponsored rock festival in U.S. history, Vortex One in Estacada, Oregon, August 1970. Hello and welcome to Words and Pictures on KABU. I'm your host, S.W. Conser, and I'm live in the studio today with two guests who are bringing together the worlds of history nerds and comics nerds, and it's all to commemorate the centennial this year of a larger-than-life figure in Oregon history. Governor Tom McCall. So first, I'd like to welcome back to the show Sarah Merck. Hi, Sarah. You have been particularly busy this year.
Yeah, hi. It's great to be here.
Yeah, you left the Portland Mercury for the locally published Bitch magazine. You've edited a major collection of Matt Borz's cartoons, Life Begins at Incorporation. And now you've collaborated with comics artist Daniel DeFord on this graphic novella, Tom McCall and the Vortex.
Yeah, I've been up to a lot of fun projects, and it's great to be at Bitch, which is a national feminist magazine that's based here in Portland, working on feminist writing, feminist issues, and also working on these comics, which I think are really fun to put together, and people have seemed to really enjoy. So,
yeah, well, we're going to talk about the Tom McCall and the Vortex comic in just a minute, but first, I am delighted and honored to introduce the founder. I believe you're the founder of Kick-Ass Oregon History in conjunction with the good folks at Know Your City. He leads some seamy body tours of the shadowy side of Portland, if such a thing can be imagined. Doug Kent Crispin, welcome to Words and Pictures.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here and a pleasure to be chatting about Tom McCall with you and Sarah Merck.
And now before we get to taking apart the legend of Tom McCall, we have a couple of quick announcements to make. The first announcement is that we have a pair of passes to give away to next weekend's Northwest Animation Festival. Those screenings will be running between May 17th and 19th. On the website is nwanimationfest.com. So the third and fourth callers at 503-231-8032 will each take home a pair of festival passes. Now, you do have to pick them up at KABU's front desk during regular business hours, but what's wrong with that? You get to visit the studios, so get on the phone and dial that number, 503-231-8032. So our second announcement, very briefly, is about the organization that both of you work with, Sarah and Doug. I have been informed that Know Your City, formerly the Dill Pickle Club, that was a classy name, the Dill Pickle Club. Nothing against Know Your City. It's very descriptive, and the domain was available, I'm sure. I do want to mention that there is a call for artists. This is a new project. Sarah, tell us a little bit about this project, Comics for Change, Illustrated Stories from Oregon's Front Lines.
Yeah, this is a really exciting and rare project. It's called Comics for Change, and Know Your City, which is a local arts nonprofit, got a grant to create 10 comics about the history of activists in Oregon. So they're hiring writers and artists to create a series of these 10 comics that will be biographies of Oregon activists, and they get to pay all the artists and writers. So it's a great opportunity, and it's going to be a really great collection. And if you want to apply, if you're an artist or if you're a writer and you'd like to work on a comic that is really important and about Oregon, go to knowyourcity.org. And there's application materials there. And really, everyone should feel encouraged to apply. You don't have to be a super professional artist or writer. They're looking for diverse voices. So knowyourcity.org is the place to go to apply.
You've both written and drawn a comic for, the Oregon History Comics series.
Uh-huh. Yeah, a lot of people are familiar with the Oregon History Comics series that came out not this past March, but the year before. And that was a series of 10 comics about Oregon history with 10 different artists. But I wrote them all. And we're thinking, okay, those were really successful. They sold out of 2 print runs. Mm. So what's next? What should we do next? And I thought, instead of having me write a whole a 10 series of comics next, we should get more people to write comics and more people to draw comics. So this is branching out to get sort of broader perspectives in the series.
So yeah, this is going to be, it says it's more like history in the making than the last comics. This is going to be honoring the lives of social activists who are alive now, fighting for the rights we enjoy in Oregon. And a series of 10 comics, each of the 10 contributing artists will be awarded $500. Each of the 5 contributing writers will be awarded $500. And there's also a nomination form for an outstanding activist. So send your story tips on someone who you think has made a significant difference in the state. Applications are due May 24th. Go to knowyourcity.org and search for comics.
Yeah, it seems like exactly the kind of project that a lot of KBOO listeners would be interested in, because it's honoring and informing people about the lives of people who've really made a lot of change in Oregon and maybe who don't get written about that often. And it's funding the work of local artists and writers. So it's a really great project. KnowYourCity.org is the place to go. Check it out and apply.
Yes, very community news there. All right, now I want to get down to the graphic novella here, Tom McCall and the Vortex. I do want to mention that Daniel DeFord was not available to join us this morning for a very happy reason. He's currently in Ashland on an artist's fellowship. And when he comes back to Portland, he'll be bringing along a new woodcut comic. And with any luck, there'll be a gallery show that we can announce. Daniel has been on the show, of course, but listeners may be more familiar with his work just from